I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Our long national nightmare is over. It's VGC, a video game podcast with me, Jordan Midler, Andy Robinson, and Pete Donaldson. This week, the Activision Blizzard saga is over, and Mario and Spider-Man 2 duke it out. But first, how are we doing, folks? Pete, how are you?
I'm good. I, in tribute to the VGC podcast, a video game podcast, I've got myself an energy drink, which I don't normally have.
I'm
very much a
they've
coffee.
They've all got to have masculine names, haven't they? Dark Thunder. Zero Blast.
This is Zero Blast.
It doesn't even make any sense. No Blast.
No.
A blast of nothing.
It's very much an Aldi speciality produced for the Aldi Stores Limited. So, a storm is coming. What's the point in being fearless if you can't show it? You must live your life without limits and scream about it from the rooftops. No, the mountaintops. That sounds like something it's almost Japan English, isn't it?
It sounds like it's been Google translated.
Yeah, great stuff. Lovely.
I'll have to try that out. I consider myself an energy drink connoisseur. Remember that wee boy, the chicken connoisseur? Is he still kicking a ball? I'm the energy drink equivalent of that.
What a legend.
I think he got cancelled.
I think
he had a friend who might have been problematic in the being put inside kind of problematic.
We'll try and get him on the podcast for next week.
Yeah.
I'm partaking in the much less masculine but equally delicious Ultra Peachy Keen, because you know me,
I'm Ultra Peachy Keen. Lovely, Jordan.
Do I need
Fantastic.
To get involved in this energy drink?
Oh, definitely.
World? I've got like a water.
No. Water is the beta's energy drink. Everyone knows that. You need to get involved in some luminous.
To be fair, I do feel like I need an energy drink. I had a cheeky midweek curry last night, which is why my voice is rather coarse.
Right, it's not the curry though, is it? It's the Singer beer or the Cobra.
The Cobra. Yeah. Cobra. I like Singer. That's a good beer.
Classic.
Are you a very hot curry man, Andy, or do you try and relax it?
Do you know what? I think some curries are, they are like the energy drink, like the Monster, no offence to them. Oh, there are other brands available, the Zero Blast equivalent of curries, where they're just hot to make you feel like a man.
Yeah.
Like,
the
vindaloo is not a tasty curry. Mm. It just tastes like hot. So you need to find like a nice middle ground, right? I think
what
I had like
Danzac? What's wrong with a nice Danzac?
Yeah, that's all right, yeah. I don't mind a Gelfrazy, but a Gelfrazy's a bit chilly for me. You know, like I want it hot, but I don't want it to be hot because you've chucked some chilies in it.
Yeah.
You know, I want the sauce to be hot. That's lazy.
You just turned up the difficulty level without even adding any different AI. You've just shoved more monsters in a room.
Yeah. You've not made the chili hot, the curry hotter. You've just put hot things in it.
I am a chicken chasney and a cheese naan man. First story this week, Microsoft has officially completed its acquisition of Activision Blizzard.
Hey,
pulled down the cord, the balloons are flying, confetti everywhere, and completing the game industry's and Microsoft's biggest deal ever, the Xbox maker has taken ownership of the major console and PC franchises, including Call of Duty, Warcraft, and Diablo. It's also established a major presence in the mobile gaming scene with the addition of Candy Crush maker King. Other developers joining the Xbox studios are Infinity Ward, Raven Software, Sledgehammer Games, Treyarch, Toys for Bob, Beanox, and High Moon Studios. Quote, "As one team, we'll learn, innovate, and continue to deliver on our promise to bring the joy and community of gaming to more people," said Microsoft's head of gaming, Phil Spencer. "We'll do this in a culture that strives to empower everyone to do their best work, where all people are welcome, and is centered on our ongoing commitment to gaming for everyone." Andy, before we go on, how relieved are you that the story that never ended is now almost just about done?
Quite relieved. Yes, I'm relieved that I don't have to write about this anymore, but we probably will be writing about it for years to come, won't we? Yeah, it's nice to have this behind us so that I don't have to dig through court documents on this particular subject anymore. And we can all go back to and stop pretending to be legal experts now, as the average man on the Discord server has been doing for the last 18 months. We can resume with our lives, and Xbox fans can now pretend to be huge fans of Call of Duty.
And King, usually, Candy Crush,
yeah, King,
massive.
Oh, King, yeah.
When you get taken over by a bigger company, it's, you know, you're worried about layoffs and stuff like this. In this case, I'd just take a back seat and not worry about it, to be honest, because you won't be releasing any games anytime soon.
If I was Bethesda, I mean, we've been saying this for a while. If I was Bethesda's publishing team, I wouldn't be resting on my laurels right now, because let's be honest, or even Xbox's publishing team, because if you like, who's better at selling video games out of those three?
The Call of Duty people.
Well, there's not much. It's not much room for debate, is there? Yeah. So who's going to be? Are you going to have the Xbox guys selling Call of Duty? I mean, I know that they're technically they're run separately, but how long does that happen? Like, it just, for me, you put the Activision guys in charge of that, right?
Yeah,
like
definitely.
They are a well-oiled machine, and Xbox is absolutely not a well-oiled machine. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out culturally. Like, culturally, it's a bit of a clash, right? Those two things. Like, this is, Activision's a corporate juggernaut shaped by the necessities of the market, right? Mm-hmm. They have like fired and plundered until their studios are this conveyor belt of annual hits that have the most current hip hop music on their trailers, the most trending TikTok videos, and they immediately resonate with their audience and they sell a bajillion copies every year. Suddenly they're now within this platform in an environment where they don't have to do that. Oh, you don't have to. Guess what? You're not all getting fired if Call of Duty is not a smash hit this year. You don't have to turn this Modern Warfare 2 DLC into a numbered box sequel, allegedly, you know, which is what has allegedly happened this year. It's the pressure in from that respect is somewhat off. So I'd be very interested to see how that shakes out, right? Because whether we like it or not, a lot of Activision games in particular, I mean, obviously they've had a problematic couple of years, which has been annoyingly kind of brushed under the carpet in terms of their work culture. But a lot of their hits have been shaped by that fact, by that, you know, that fire underneath them. And you know what? There's not a great history of independent developers, you know, being swallowed up and then, you know, things going on to be better, is there? I mean, my personal bet, if you put a gun to my head, I honestly think we're going to look back in 10 years at the whole kerfuffle around how important Call of Duty is and laugh, because I can't see it under these conditions, Call of Duty, you know, getting better.
Yeah, there's like a weird vibe that people still think Call of Duty is the Call of Duty of the late 2010s, where it was the biggest thing in the world, it was the midnight launches, it was all that stuff, and it just doesn't seem to have that, like, quite that staying power anymore.
Well, I mean, obviously, in terms commercially, it does. I mean, it's still the biggest selling game of the year.
Yeah, but vibes
certainly. I mean, you know this because you're a Call of Duty player. I'm a Call of Duty player within the community. They've not been happy for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
In terms of the quality of the game. I mean, they can be vocally negative, right? They've been very good, but there's certainly been, I'd say, three of the last four or two of the last four have been poor games. You know, that, again, I guess contradicting myself, that have come out of that circumstance where they've had to pump them out, right? Like a Cold War was not a great game. That was allegedly thrown together because of problems at Sledgehammer, I think. You know, this Modern Warfare 3... Is allegedly DLC that they've kind of patched together into a box product. So I don't know. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe, you know, going to having the pressure off and being able for them being able to kind of focus on a 2-year release cycle or something like that for a year release cycle would be the best thing that ever happened.
You're saying make Call of Duty great again. That's what I'm hearing.
It does feel like that, doesn't it? The community have been like, there's been some angst in the community around the game for a little while now. I'd say a couple of years. Even like you see like a lot of the top influencers of players as well are getting a bit bored. I think there's definitely a space for someone to come and do something in that area.
Is it just kind of like map diversity or weaponry or how? Because for me, Modern Warfare has always felt like quite a simple game in the whole kind of first person shooter.
I mean, obviously Battle Royale was the kick up the arse that it needed.
Right.
But, you know, everyone played that game every night during the pandemic.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, probably the quality of that game has not really gone up hugely since then. People have not been very happy with the maps they've introduced on Warzone. I mean, there's certainly room now. You know full well, there's a ticking clock. PlayStation have got this game for 10 years minimum. If I was them, I'd be going out now and chucking money at Battlefield, which is, I fully expect them to do that. We had a conversation with Vince Zampella, who's now in charge of Battlefield, Mr. Respawn, ex Call of Duty, who invented, you know, kind of created Call of Duty. We kind of put that to him going, oh yeah, if we were Sony, we'd chuck money at you. And he was like, I wouldn't be against that. So watch this space.
That seems to be a good end for kind of Battlefield to come back. There's Pete, just on your point about Call of Duty being a kind of a basic, simple game, I think that was kind of the beauty of it back in the day, especially if we're going from the modern Call of Duty era, it's really Call of Duty 4. When online multiplayer and like ranking up your weapons and all that stuff, it was brilliant, and the gameplay was pretty simple. There was a percentage that could do things like 360 no scopes and all this fancy stuff. But now, if you watch how they revealed Modern Warfare 3's multiplayer, it was all like top tier streamers. So the way they're playing the game is they're sliding around every map and they're like jumping and dive canceling, and it barely looks like Call of Duty anymore. And that is the kind of direction they've gone in. It's all a kind of, and Andy knows this as well from all of our Warzone conversations, it became this zero-sum game of, as soon as the new update's out, what is the OP weapon? What are the two overpowered weapons that you use? And then you see everyone using it for 3 months until they fix it. Like, it just becomes the same thing.
Formulaic, kind of,
yeah.
Do you remember that one Christmas where they went away for Christmas?
Yeah.
And there was that overpowered gun. What was it?
It was not like a light machine gun that just had like no recoil.
It was a sniper. What was it called? It was DMR or something. It was like a DMR, something like that. It was pandemic Christmas. They went, all the development team went away for Christmas. And this like kind of sniper, like it's kind of like a semi-auto sniper.
Overpowered
that I just wanted to play Warzone over Christmas with my mates. And we just stopped. Because it was unplayable. Because the development team's gone away for Christmas. So there's no one there to like make a hot fix or anything. And everyone's using this pissing like machine gun sniper.
Yeah, you know, it was the DMR.
Walk around the corner, dead.
Removed some. You'd think that something like Battle Royale would promote variety. Because it's like, oh, I want to play like a long distance. I want to be like a sniper, or I want to get like close up combat.
It's like FIFA, right? They do it on purpose.
Yeah.
They change the meta on purpose.
Definitely. And it would just be nice to be able to like drop into Warzone and not have to watch like a 10-minute video beforehand and be like, okay, here's the gun.
I have to read VGC's handy guides.
I'd love to not have to do VGC, but I am in fact cursed. Speaking of Activision Blizzard, the big boss, Phil Spencer, also said, today we start work to bring beloved Activision Blizzard and King franchises to Game Pass and other platforms. We'll share more about when you can expect to play these games in the coming months. We know you're excited, and we are too. Pete Donaldson, do they go out and do weird licensing deals to get the weird old movie Activision games on, or is it all just tat that they still have the rights to?
We said this last week, Pitfall. It's just Pitfall. Yeah. They're going to bring Pitfall back in a big way. We had, I think, a redo somewhere in the late 90s, I want to say. in 3D, or I may have just confused that with an old PC game called Montezuma's Revenge. But I'll just bring Pitfall back. We are gagging for a new Pitfall game. That's what we need.
The people want Pitfall. Yeah, it's weird because you think... I always thought that the big hype moment would be they put out an infographic, like, or one of the wee JPEGs on Twitter that's like, here's all the Call of Duty games. But if they do that, they've not really got much else to put on that they actually own. Because they're not going to... I suppose they have the remakes of, like, Spyro and the remakes of Crash and things like this, but they're not going to go into the kind of the deep Activision catalogue.
Well, you just sort of feel that whatever Activision does, they'll do it in a weird way. Did you see this week that Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, the redo of that, the Steam Deck is the only place where you can have an offline mode.
Oh, really?
Nav. Yeah, they've released it. They've released an update for the Steam Deck, I believe, that just gives the Steam Deck offline mode, whereas those on PC versions of Steam doesn't get that opportunity. It's just absolutely insane stuff.
That is, like, extremely strange. And plus, I mean, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 is fantastic, but see if you've got a Steam Deck. See if you want to play some Tony Hawk games. Not that difficult. Steam makes it very easy for you to go and play some of those old Tony Hawk games, which I have enjoyed greatly. Andy, how did they roll out the Activision stuff? Did they do it in dribs and drabs? Did they do it in one big fell swoop?
How did they, or how do they?
How do they?
A fell swoop.
Well, I don't know. If you believe the word of Mr. Spencer, then nothing's really going to happen until 2024, right?
Mm.
He says, I'd be surprised if that's the case. Like, I mean, you remember Bethesda, they kind of lobbed like a ton of old games on a Game Pass.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised they've not done that. He said in his highly Paxman like Xbox official podcast interview that because of the long kind of regulatory process and all that stuff, that like how long this has taken, that, oh yeah, we haven't been able to plan for this, which I think is bullshit.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if some stuff, I mean, yeah, that's weird, right? I don't know, maybe like the licensing is not as simple as you think with a lot of their back catalogue, especially like you think of some of the games like Spider-Man games, things like that. Well, that's probably an issue.
Yeah, I don't think they get that stuff. I think they get like...
A lot of these studios' older games were published by like Vivendi or something like that, right? Because yeah. Activision merged with Vivendi. So maybe it's a bit of a mess.
Phil wanted to resurrect Hexen, which I was a big fan of back in the day. Do you remember that?
Talk about niche.
Come on. That's a big license for Activision, honestly.
It is, but there's someone who runs a website, you know, that makes money based on views, right?
I wouldn't write about Hexen. Right, okay, fair.
I don't think we've even covered him saying he wants to bring back Hexen. That's how much faith I have in the popularity of Hexen.
I'm going to take 2 weeks off. Like,
I've heard the word Hexen about five times in the last sentence, all right? So it sounds like everyone's talking about Hexen, John, all right?
I've heard that too. It's one of the hot bangers that are coming out in 2024. That's the thing. Oh, and people are just going to say that we hate Xbox, and God bless you. But a friend of the site, Alex Donaldson, pointed out that when people were making these like fake Xbox Smash Brothers lineups of like all the characters that Xbox now owns, they're still like dick all compared to like Nintendo's like output, and it's a weird situation. I feel like when you bought Bethesda, you got tons and tons of games, and I think when you buy Activision, you get like a couple of huge franchises, but the actual number of games that they still have the rights.
Oh yeah, you got to keep in mind. I mean, Blizzard King are the bigger deal. I mean, Activision's only been doing Call of Duty for a while now. Hmm. That's all they've been doing. I mean, I remember talking to the PR team there like in years past, and they just had like when Destiny left Activision, they had nothing to do.
Yeah.
Like, it was just Call of Duty and that's it.
Set about, wait for November, Call of Duty for three months and then do...
I mean, obviously, I'm being frivolous there. I'm sure they had things to do.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Activision PR team.
Got to pay Declan Rice. Story number two. Gollum redeemed. New $50 King Kong game is called a complete scam. A new King Kong game has gone viral due to unusually poor graphics, with one player labeling it a complete scam. Skull Island Rise of Kong was released for consoles and PC on Tuesday and quickly filled social media with videos highlighting the shoddy presentation, which at certain points appears to be incomplete. I think that's been charitable. It certainly is incomplete. One clip, which has been viewed over 30,000 times on Twitter, shows a cutscene in which the developer appears to have inserted a static image in place of an incomplete animation. They likely paint you a word picture if you've not seen this. Kong comes into a clearing. There's a dinosaur there. Camera goes to Kong. He goes, oh. Camera goes to the dinosaur. Instead of the dinosaur animating, like, snapping jaws, it is just a still picture of snapping jaws. And then it goes back to Kong. And Kong's like, oh. It's stunning. It is. I can't believe it. Shipped. I'm so happy for it. I'm almost considering buying it myself.
I'm definitely not team Kong or even King Kong or Aja Kong, the wrestler from Japan. I believe that photograph was necessary because it was a memory from a photograph Kong had seen before or something. So I think that is a legitimate use of the photograph. But let's just say, Jordan, the actual displaying of it is a little less so, if you know what I mean. It looks like a honking pile of shit, and I'm very enjoyable. I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it.
Jordan Midler, VGC here. Why is Kong looking at pictures? Why is Kong like looking at pictures of dinosaurs and then going, oh, that's that one here.
Until Jordan and I download that game, I am completely in the dark. But is King Kong even a license anymore? Does this count as like one of those kind of like Xbox 360 kind of tie-in games when King Kong, presumably, anyone can release a King Kong game these days. I know Chewit's probably had to spend a load of money in the 80s to do their character, but presumably that character is so long, you may as well just be basing it on an old fairy tale or something.
I'm just browsing the mostly negative Steam reviews. There's some bangers in here. So the developer's called Iguana Bee. Mm-hmm. Like, so Iguana and a bee. Iguana Bee Games, more like Iguana Bee rid of this game from my Steam library.
Oh, I mean, the movement, John, of said Kong, it just looks like there's just no movement or fluidity or any. It doesn't even look like an asset flip. It looks like they've spent time to make it look bad and play bad, which is a real achievement.
Review number two. I will never be as brave as the people who thought this acceptable enough to release. Someone else says Harambe died for this.
It looks like one of those things you see on TikTok where it's like all these licensed characters that have been ripped out of a game and just put, like, all the models have been ripped out and put in GTA Online or something like that. You have to expect like Mr. Beast to walk out and like The Simpsons. Like, it's very it's just amazing the fact that, I mean, God bless them, they're trying to charge 45 quid for it. However, PlayStation Plus members, they do get a 25% discount, so the new PlayStation Plus was ultimately worth it.
I'm going to play this game, I've decided.
Yeah, this is how they get you in it. They do it so badly, you ironically have to play it. I don't know, man. We're being tricked, and we are happy to be tricked because it looks so charmingly bad.
It was published by Game Mill Entertainment.
What an apt name.
Yeah. According to the website, Game Mill has a proven track record of leveraging the equity of some of the world's most beloved brands and working with developers.
Fucking hell, think of, like, someone came up with that phrase, leveraging the equity. Yeah. Like, you're really, like, endearing me to your publisher.
Sounds like the by telling of me Dark Thunder can.
So, I knew this Game Mill, this Game Mill reminded me of something. They apparently recently put out an Avatar game that was terrible, but they also put out seminal terrible game Big Rigs Over the Road Racing, which Giant Bomb fans among us will remember as the game where your truck only could go backwards, none of the buildings had any collision. the game didn't have a top speed, so if you just held forward your truck would just go infinitely quickly until the game crashed. They're also the creators of Nickelodeon All-Stars Brawl and Nickelodeon All-Stars Brawl 2. So we look forward to another Game Mill banger. Andy, when you were on the mags back in the 360 days, and I remember this from going into my local game shop like every 2 days, it felt like shit was just getting put out constantly. Were you forever getting stuff on your desk?
Well, like, more before published? You got to go back to like PS2 days when the shit was getting put out left, right, and center. The HD era killed it all off, basically, because you know, you think about how many developers closed during that era. Independent developers, they were killed off because the stakes got too high when the HD era came in. The costs spiraled, you know, which they're still doing now. For PS2, you could put out, an original game from an independent studio for a couple of million, and then suddenly those costs were tens of millions. You were only a haze away from your studio closing, which is what happened to Free Radical. So that's why you stopped seeing those games, because people stopped taking risks.
Did you not think that when it got to the HD era, it just became the same game, but everything was a bit greasier.
Exactly.
There's just a lot more haze to it and stuff like that. I remember the video game that had really easy achievements, Lost, the video game. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
That terrible tie-in. One of the very few video games I've actually finished, just because apparently it was really easy.
Two guys at 360 Mag, including our own Chris Scullion, who would play anything if the the achievements were
achievements are easy
to get.
I was exactly the same.
Play anything. Game, yeah.
I played the Green Lantern game, the Ryan Reynolds vehicle to get the Platinum Trophy. I was just... This was... I mean, I blame Greg Miller for this, but every week on his old IGN podcast, he'd be like, okay, here's the games this week that you can buy and complete in like 3 hours. And I was buying games in the morning, getting the Platinum, and then taking them back to my local game center, God rest it, and just being like, yeah, I've finished it now. Can I just... To the point where they were... You know how at game shops they have all the discs in little plastic sleeves behind the desk to stop people
pocketing
them?
Pile.
No, they would literally be like, if it's pre-owned and you can get it back to us within a couple of days, just take it and you don't need to pay for it. Like, just swap out games constantly. And that's how I ended up playing like everything from that generation, because they're like, we're sick of seeing you, just take games and go away.
Did you ever play Prison Break The Conspiracy, which is a game that I played, mainly because I look a little bit like Teabag from Prison Break. So it was nice to have a bit of representation as... I think he's a convicted sex offender in the film. I've never really watched Prison Break, to be honest, but I've certainly played the video game.
Yeah. I'm surprised you've never ended up in a game, Pete. It feels like you would just have been scanned for... You look like an L.A. Noire ruffian. Like, you look like you should be telling lies in L.A. Noire.
Yeah, or selling something illegal in Grand Theft Auto. Yeah, I think I did a couple of voices for a couple of... the Germans are still really into graphic adventures. So I did a voice for Zack McCracken 2, that was basically... It's a fan game. And also The Journey Down or something. I also did a voice for another point and click. It was, beautifully done. A kind of like an African-themed, point and click adventure. I played a sailor, and I was bad at it. I was terrible at it, so I never pursued it, to be honest. But one of my favorite games that are down this kind of like tack is Deadliest Catch: Alaskan Storm, which is relatively recent. It's worth hunting out because it is the dullest tie-in game I have ever experienced in my life. You have to spend hours looking at crabs, turning them over, looking at what sex they are, popping them back, upgrading your boy basket, so to speak. And then you just spend hours on docks, just pushing trolleys around and making sure your ship's got enough resources. If I wanted to look at crab testicles, even I don't know whether they have testicles, I would just go down the, down the shops. But
go down the local crab shop.
It's down the old crab shop. It's really atrocious stuff. Deadliest Catch: Alaskan Storm. Well worth watching at least a playthrough, because it's so tedious.
I spent £80 on a PS4 copy of Duck Dynasty, so I'm right there with you. That was an Activision game. That's an Activision banger. Yeah. Get that on Game Pass.
There you go. Speak as being the voice of one of the Discovery Channel subsidiaries as well.
Oh, are you?
We're always every show on DMAX is just someone's building a cabin off grid and they've got to move a latrine. That's it. That's all that happens on those shows. Bless them.
Gollum redeemed indeed. Just finally speaking on German point and clicks and stuff like that. When I went to Daedalic for Gollum on a press trip that was somewhat apocalyptic in retrospect, entire studio, like their bread and butter was those kind of point and click games. Their studio was covered head to toe in like fan art, and they're like, yeah, people, like, they don't do much business outside of like mainland Europe, but they're so popular here. I was like, that's weird.
Some developers break out from that mold, don't they, and then find that their best laid plans are a bit more difficult than doing the old point and clicks.
Yeah, speaking of best laid plans, the Van Gogh Museum pulls Pokemon promo cards due to safety and security concerns. Last month, Pokemon Company was forced to apologize after scalpers appeared to spoil a planned collaboration with the museum, which saw a line of unique Pokemon Van Gogh merch made available. When the items were first made available, social media videos showed huge crowds swarming the museum, snatching up items with claims that many people had bragged about plans to resell the items for profit. The special Pikachu promo card, Pikachu with grey felt hat, was given to customers for free after purchasing any item, and quickly appeared for sale in large numbers on auction sites for over $500. On Friday, the Van Gogh Museum confirmed it would no longer be giving away the card due to safety concerns. Quote, "The Van Gogh Museum and the Pokemon Company International take the safety and security of visitors and staff very seriously. Recently, a small group of individuals created an undesirable situation that has led us to take the difficult decision to remove the Pikachu with grey felt hat promo card from the museum. In this way, visitors will be able to experience the special collection of Pokemon paintings and the rest of the museum in a safe and enjoyable manner."
my favorite, you'll be seeing this in Mirror, guys, but my favorite quote about this card was on Twitter, where it's, "Pikachu with the grey felt hat from the Van Gogh Museum collab is here. Cards like this with an artistic value way beyond the mere printed cardboard is the reason why I love collecting."
He's got a wee fat belly.
He does got a wee fat belly.
Another opportunity to obtain Pikachu with grey felt hat promo will be soon made available. This story is now out of date because the opportunity has come and gone. So this is where I diverge. I was on the Pokemon Center website, as one does, looking at stuff for my girlfriend's birthday. I happened to be online 2 minutes after the Pikachu with grey felt hat was dropped unannounced on the Pokemon Center. If you spent £30 on trading card products, you got one for free. I ended up with two. Jordan Midler of VGC has beaten the scalpers, has beaten the Pokemon Company once again.
How much are you going to sell it for?
Zero pounds and zero pence. Because one of them's from you, one of them's from a partner. Yeah, exactly.
Does it have an artistic value way beyond the mere printed cardboard, Jordan?
It has a wee fat belly, so that's the artistic value.
What I like about that gift is, Jordan, because like when I buy something that I know is more valuable than my partner knows it's valuable, it's a fool's errand because she's never going to respect it. But at least your partner knows that these things are intrinsically valuable.
Oh yeah, we were watching all the vlogs of like people going to the Van Gogh Museum and like mispronouncing every single name and being like, yeah, I've left with 50 cards, like brilliant stuff. I was like buying them off people as they were coming out of the museum and stuff like that. This was meant to run until January.
The Pokemon Company is so bad at this, right?
Yeah.
They're so bad at it. I mean, this keeps happening, doesn't it?
You'd think that the company that, like, every 3 months they're releasing new limited trading card product, and like, it's not you if you want to get the new cards the week or the weeks they come out, they print tons of them, so it's usually okay. But it's whenever they do these limited collaborations, they usually print about 10% of what's actually needed. Like, this
happens again and again, like the London pop-up shops, where the queues were literally around the building and were closed by 9 a.m. every day, and they'd always sell out of the only thing that everyone wanted, the special plush. You know, the Pokemon Worlds thing in London last year, where I took my kids on the Saturday, and I had literally, you can hold it up, Jordan, because I do not give a shit. Like,
not beef eater, like a Tower of London Guard.
Beef eater Pikachu. Yeah, so I went to the Pokemon Worlds thing at London last year, and I had like press access to the store, so you go straight in. There's just nothing left. Like, I was even asking like the PRs, like, have you got like any plushies for my kids, please? They're, no.
Sorry.
All gone.
And it's mad because like
when, how do they not know? Yeah. Of course they know. You, especially you would be on that now. You veins. Cannot. No sane person can really believe that they don't know.
Yeah.
You know, which then it becomes like a little bit malicious, doesn't it? That surely they're engineering this and they're not incentivized to sort it out. I think it should be called out more because instances like this, you know, when people are like brawling, you know, to get these cards, that's down to them. They're not stupid. They know exactly what they're doing. Yeah. You know, we're going to stick a limited edition card in this museum that's designed for, it's not designed for like Black Friday scrums. It's designed for orderly queues, right? What's going to happen? Whoops. Yeah.
It's like a tiny little bespoke shop for little old Dutch ladies to walk about and buy like postcards. And there's these massive guys and they're like £1,000 airdrop. I wish I was there. I'd love to be part of one of those fights because I think I would do very well in them. But the issue for me was like a lot of the Van Gogh stuff was like nice. Like they released like a nice Pikachu statue and stuff like that. And people were just buying it, not wanting the actual thing. They just wanted the card. Like they just wanted to get the Van Gogh card. So I think the solution was print it into oblivion so that it's worthless. Like print like millions and millions of copies of this card and just give it to everyone with every promotion, or do it in a way that, like, I watched the videos the first day. There was no like separate area for people that wanted the Pokemon stuff. It was just next to like books of Van Gogh shit. It was like, here's a table of Pokemon stuff, and of course it was like chaos.
I think this is art, though. I think this is what Van Gogh would have wanted. You know,
yeah, kind of, people ripping, you know, each other's ears off.
Everyone off their face on him, absinthe, pulling each other's ears off. Yeah, to get at the cards. Lovely.
All I know is the next time they announce like a promo card, I think I should be sent as a Vice style journalist with a camera person and like a flak jacket, being like, I'm here in the middle of it and just getting just, like smashed
like a European away day.
Yeah,
Stone Island.
I've got a Van Gogh away.
Wearing all black. When we come back after the break, a couple more stories, and then big Andy Robinson has been playing that hot new Mario. See you in a minute.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we are back. Analog's next console will play Nintendo 64 games in 4K. All two of them you still want to play. Launching in 2024, the Analog 3D will play 64 games in 4K resolution. It will also support original display modes with, quote, reference quality recreations of specific model CRTs and PMVs. What's a PMV, Andy? You have any idea? I don't know what a CRT
no
is.
No idea. What? A PMV?
PMV.
PVM?
PVM,
polyvinyl monkey. Polyvinyl monkey.
Yeah, that's what I think.
It's another
it
collector's figurine.
it's art. It comes with a promo card. This is a fancy, expensive N64 that plays games in 4K and upscales them. Looks all nice. Andy, do you have these analogs? Did you have like the NES
no,
one and the
no.
GBA
do
one?
Know, do you know what? I was very tempted to get the Pocket, but I wouldn't use it.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't use it. So, you know, like they do the FOMO thing, right? Well, they're very good at that. They're the definition of FOMO analogs. It seems that they have hired some people from the Pokemon company and they make about 4 units for each version, which sell out like less, you know, faster than you can actually get to them. I'm pretty sure they did like some see-through ones or something, and it was like it was the old scalper PS5 bullshit, pandemic bullshit, you know, where
right.
they sold out before it went on the page.
Yeah.
Because clearly scalpers use bots that find the products and buy them all up. And so, yeah, I can't wait to not be able to buy this N64. Yeah. This has got sellout in, you know, 0.10 seconds written all over it.
There's definitely a space for like the definite kind of like experience with each console, I think.
Oh, 100%.
Because there's just so much kind of like Soldier Boy style drop shipping of every kind of retro experience going. So I do find these sort of products quite alluring because you,
oh,
know,
I'm
for
looking,
a fact,
I'm looking
you are
forward
getting
to it.
Everything. You're looking forward to the definite experience. But
especially from this era, right? This era is the one. Excuse me. The analog CEO
about here, doesn't it?
Yeah, the analog CEO talks a bit about this because obviously scaling pixel graphics to 4K is fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
Make the pixels bigger, right? Whereas early 3D is very, very tough to emulate properly. I mean, you've seen even Nintendo's official emulation on Switch Online. Games are I've got all kinds of problems.
Mm.
You know, like frame rate issues or missing graphical effects and stuff like that.
The mist.
So
the
way that they reverse engineer like the actual console and have it run from hardware, you know, emulating the exact same, you know, the original hardware rather than emulation. I mean, they've made some tall statements. I mean, they said this week that basically it's either buy an original N64 or this. That's it.
Yeah.
There's no other option.
The CEO, and you quoted them in your article, Andy, it just really made me laugh because he's clearly already exhausted.
Yeah, he's like well up for it.
I think basically he's clearly sort of going, I know what environment we're working in and I know you're all perverts. So for me, it's either you buy this or you buy an N64 and a CRT.
I think there
end
was some,
story.
Some swear words in there.
There were
as well.
Some swear words.
But if, like, to your point, for like your options, if you want to go and play those games these days, they're really like minimal, basically. Mm. Like, I think I've got some sort of like upscaler thing. I'm sure I have. It's like, but it's they're all like the solutions are not great. Mm. Like, I'm pretty sure the among the community, like the retro community, the de facto, like the definitive solution for playing N64 in HD. You know, with HDMI is like an actual quite expensive mod where you have to open the machine and get your soldering gun out and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that there's no acceptably great like off the shelf plug-in solution, I don't think, especially not at 4K. So
they can't even get like, I think there was an Xbox original doohickey this week that converted a component to HDMI. And you know, this is supposed to be the great white hope for getting this stuff on new tellies and stuff. But it was very much, it was just too dark. Like, they made everything really dark. And it's like, did you not test this on loads of different systems? But yeah, and everyone was really upset about that. I do watch a lot of, like, retro YouTubers talking about the best way to get signals out of their original hardware, and it's always way more complicated than it should be in 2023.
Oh, it's your dad fanning about a car. Like, it is just that. It is the, I mean, I do find that interesting, but like, I was looking at the Pocket as well for reasons that will become clear next year, but it's very expensive for something that I'm like, they've not started releasing them in the generation that I have a lot of an attachment to yet. If they do like an analog PlayStation 2, like, I will bite your hand off for that. Like, that'll be, I'll be right in there. But also, I can, right, it's just us, but I can play a lot of PS2 games on this computer very easily, and they are already in 4K, and they look pretty good. So,
it's just for this particular, like, generation, this thing's going to sell tons. I mean, you even have to look at the GoldenEye re-release recently. It's pretty ropey, like, really ropey. And, again, like, you played, like, Ocarina of Time and stuff on Switch Online. It's like missing like basic, what you'd think of basic graphical effects like fog, which drastically changes the tone of the scene and the gameplay. But it's incredibly complex to emulate these games, and you'd have to do it on a game by game basis. So if they deliver what they promise, this thing's going to just fly off of their metaphorical shelves. All the options they say it has as well, like being able to unlock the frame rate and, you know, change certain graphical effects. I'm well up for it.
I wonder if people will be happy about it. Speaking of wonder, final point this week, Super Mario Bros. Wonder is out tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Thursday. The first new 2D Mario in God knows how long. We have Mr. Mario himself, whose lovely children broke the embargo to Nintendo staff at EGX. I was heartily laughing at that tweet. First of all, Andy, are your kids still in Nintendo jail? And second of all, how is Super Mario Brothers Wonder?
It is wonderful. End of sentence, that's it.
Okay, thanks.
It's wicked. It's brilliant. Like, I mean, this week, you've got to go and buy Spider-Man. You've got to go and buy Mario. I think they probably complement each other nicely, especially with one of them being on a handheld. Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, I mean, if you're ever a fan of the original Mario games, this is easily the best one since Yoshi's Island. So you're going back like 30 years, basically. It's the first time they've really tried to do something new with the formula. I mean, I was never a fan of the new Super Mario Brothers games. They're very sterile, you know, very tightly attached to the original formula. It just felt, they feel played out and stale, right? Especially by New Super Mario Bros. U, which was the last one that came out 11 years ago for Wii U at launch. They used the same mechanics, the same ideas. They just felt like games that you'd played. And then they put in a multiplayer mode, which was just made you angry, you know, plonking four players in a screen designed for one and with collision. And you're bouncing over the place. Like, it just wasn't great. I mean, I like some of the 3DS ones. Or was there only one 3DS one? The second one, New Super Mario Bros. 2. I'm guessing that might be the only 3DS one. I liked that. But again, it was a very derivative of the original formula. So this game is it's a younger team. It's, it approaches the kind of, the side-scrolling Mario formula from a point of view of how do we make this resonate to an audience today who might not have played those games. And it feels fresh. It's I'm not surprised at all to see that the director of Mario, a lot of the modern 3D Marios, 3D World and Galaxy 2, that he's involved in this, because it's just absolutely stuffed full of ideas. You know, it's like a toy box where the way they designed those 3D games is everyone would come up with ideas and they just put post-it notes on the wall.
Yeah.
And allegedly for this one, they did the same and they had like 2,000 post-it notes on the wall and they whittle them down. And that's what the levels feel like. It feels like, you know, 3D World, Galaxy, where you'll start a level, it'll introduce a mechanic and then it throws it away as quickly as it was introduced. It's like a quick fire conveyor belt of imagination, basically, which is powered by those wonder effects, which is the key kind of idea behind this game. There's a power up in each world that kind of transforms it. Like it's like it would be a surprise challenge or something like that. So it makes the levels kind of almost power ups in themselves. Like, so you all get turned into big inflatable balloons and suddenly you're floating up on the screen, you know, trying to go through this obstacle course, or you'll turn into rolling spiky balls and it turns into like a, you know, almost like a racing game smashing through walls and stuff. It's really, really great. It looks beautiful. The art direction is amazing. The music's wonderful as well. It's probably the biggest jump they've made on that front in 30 years. It's like so stuffed full of personality. I think the development team said that they've invested more in animation for this game than they usually do. It's like, you know, just little things like Mario will kind of go for a pipe and then he'll jump back out to like grab his hat that's fallen off, and you know, enemies will kind of like scream as you squish their mates, and you know, or get really frustrated as they fall into a gap, you know, and go to sleep. And it's a brilliant game.
It's the first, like, I didn't mind the new Super Mario Brothers platformer, like side-scrolling platformers, but I've always been more of a 3D person, and
This feels like a side-scrolling Mario game made by the guys who made the 3D games.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah, like this, like the stuff that they work, the expansive kind of nature and the interesting kind of stuff. They, you know, New Donk City being a good example of something that they'd never done in Mario before. Presumably that has given them that scope to demonstrate that fans of this series will go with you wherever you choose to take the players.
And coming back to my point on multiplayer as well, like that's low key, like one of the best features of this game as well. You know, local multiplayer, not only is that a hell of a lot better just by the fact they've turned off collision, you know, kind of players like ghost for each other. So you can play your game, you know, without smashing all over the place because some knobs jumped in front of you. But they've kind of like, they've Dark Souls it up. So you'll see other players like spirits in your game, you know, kind of going about their and you can leave little standees, like these little cardboard cutouts. You collect like different ones, but you can press down an X and you'll drop a standee. So the idea behind them is that you can revive there. If you die in a game and there's another player near you, you can float your little ghost over to their spirit and you'll revive. Or if you do the same with a standee, but just like Dark Souls, you know, when people leave the notes, people in my playthrough, people were leaving standees to leave hints. Like they'll leave them on a top of invisible blocks or on top of like the solution to puzzles. And you're like, oh shit, you're giving me a hint. Like, come over here, you know, come solve this. Like, oh, there's a secret path over here. You'll see someone standee on it. And it, like, there were like proper clutch moments, you know, where I'm on, you know, super hard level. Like some of the levels towards the end are pretty, it's not overall, it's not a hard game, but there are some hard levels. And like where I've died right at the last minute, but then someone revives me and then just the last minute you get to the flagpole and then you both go down together. Like if you interact like that, they'll kind of like be at the flagpole with you and you'll go down together. So it like really elevates the experience, definitely.
Well, you can check out our Super Mario Brothers Wonder review on the website. Another big game this week, Spider-Man 2, a game so big we've given it its own podcast, so go and check that out. It is in this podcast feed earlier in the week. Myself, Stacey Henley, Laura Kate Dale, and Ewan Moore chatted all about it. Andy, you finished it? How far are you in the...
No, I've not finished it. I'd say I'm about halfway through, but it's another brilliant game, right? Like, just from the perspective of someone who didn't really click with the first two, like, I probably played them for, like, you know, less than 10 hours each.
Yeah.
But it's not really my open world games these days, like very easy to scare me off. Like, you know, go and make your own fun. I don't want to do that.
But, you make me my fun.
But Spider-Man 2 does a great job of funneling you towards the great stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's just a conveyor belt of brilliant set pieces. But at any point you can just stop and go and do your own thing. And it's gorgeous. The writing's great. I loved it. Or I'm loving it.
It's awesome. Fantastic. PED, if you had 70 British pounds, which of these two would you go for this weekend?
I'm a little bit like Andy. Open worlds do scare me off. But then if Super Mario Brothers, the new one, had a mechanic where you could zoom out and then zoom in somewhere else in the world and it go as quickly as Spider-Man.
That's just
so
magic.
My God,
that doesn't make sense.
Good.
Yeah, that's...
It's so... I don't know how... Like people don't respect development enough, and they don't respect people knowing that technology enough. But that is an astonishing achievement, how quickly that goes on a stock PS5.
Also,
good lord,
the most wasted bit of technology in the game, because I didn't fast travel once, because why would you?
You're like swinging around.
It's true. Why would you fast travel in that game?
Yeah. Other than to see that in action and be like, surely that doesn't
work
like
that. I bet there was tons of people with review copies like us that when that tweet went viral, the footage of it were like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
Why would you do it?
Yeah, it's a fantastic game. Go and check out all of our Spider-Man coverage. I asked on Twitter for people's favourite spin-off Marios, because that's got me thinking based off of Wonder. My favourite is always the Mario Golf games, and I think the best of them is the 3DS one, World Tour. We got some a lot of responses for quite obviously the Mario RPG games, which people are super into. Those is that Mario RPG remake this year, Andy? Is that
out next month, mate?
Is it? Jesus, yeah. Oh god, it never ends. Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games, which was a Wii classic. I feel like everyone who had a Wii had Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games.
That's the only press tour I ever went on.
Oh, really?
To get to Gamescom on that one. Thanks. Thanks, that game.
We also have shows.
Mario's Missing. Anyone remember
that? Oh, yeah, Mario's Missing. Mario Teaches
that
Typing.
That was a weird game.
People, people need to just pee or get off the pot and play a little bit of Hotel Mario on the CDI. Absolutely disgusting. A disgusting title. Where Mario talks like this all the way through.
As he should. He's an Italian-American.
He's an Italian-American, yeah. Makes sense.
According to some reviews, he's a light-skinned Italian-American. Look that up on Twitter if you want to lose your mind. Greg Jones hits out with NES Open Tournament, which is a... He says it's the only game his parents would attempt to play. Is that the first Mario Golf? It must be NES Open Tournament. Mm.
I don't think it is a Mario Golf game. I think they put him on a box.
Yeah, he's there. He's USA attire. He's Mr. America attire.
Shocking.
Looks
absolutely
like Cody
shocking.
Rhodes. and Mario Strikers Charged. The GameCube Mario Strikers game was brilliant. The Switch version was so disappointing. Like, it just lost everything that was like...
I don't think it sold well at all as well, especially by Nintendo standards. So I don't think we'll be seeing another one of those for a long time.
Yeah.
I miss sort of like soccer games that aren't licensed. I miss like...
Well, Gianni Infantino.
No, there's a Lego one coming, allegedly. Yeah.
Is there? Oh, lovely.
Yeah, 2K. I don't think it's announced, but 2K are working on
a
Lego football.
Captain Tsubasa, based on the anime.
The weird thing about the 2K Lego football game is... there are physical products for like a Lego 2K football game that people have in their hand, and they're still like, don't know. That could be to do with anything. Don't worry about it. Funny old world. We'll be back next week. Probably by next week. I mean, we're not playing it yet, but next Friday, Alan Wake 2 comes out. So hopefully we'll be able to talk to you about it by then and other bits and pieces. You can check out our YouTube and TikTok. Lots of good stuff on there. TikTok, VGC_news. Just search YouTube for VGC and ignore all the Pokemon crap. You can send comments, questions, and concerns to podcast@videogameschronicle.com. You can follow us all on X. Lots of good stuff on X at Jordan Midler, at Andy_VGC, and at Pete Donaldson. We'd like to thank the great Grant Kirkhope, who, by the way, my Twitter feed this week has just been filled with him and David from
Ubisoft. Yeah, he's left the house, mate.
Yeah.
He's left the house. I saw him in London last week, and then he's gone straight to Milan to go and see his Ubisoft friends.
Yeah.
And now I think he's in Belgium for like a music awards thing.
Lads on tour. Thank him for the VGC podcast theme, which he refused to play live at EGX, which I don't appreciate, but no wonder people were protesting. Until next week, say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Andy.
See ya.
Go and check out our Spider-Man 2 podcast and all that good stuff, and we'll see you next week.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.